Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the new heroin addiction. Is it different from the old? Guests from two generations will compare notes on how it starts and how to stop it. The new special forces in Iraq, a special forces fighter from the height of the U.S. war years on what the non-combat advisors might accomplish. And for WNYC's 90th birthday summer, we will take a three-day trip through some of our most intriguing archives today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Today, the reaction to mixed-race couples in 1950s Greenwich Village.
There is a new group of people who are going into the South Village, Negroes and white girls, who have flaunted this thing in front of some of the Italian kids down there.
Flaunted? More of that heard on WNYC History later. But first, Obama to Boehner, so sue me. Like that. And the Speaker of the House just might. Let's talk about that and more Monday Morning Politics with John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate and political director for CBS News. You hear him on the Slate Politics Gabfest on the weekends here on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hey, Brian.
And, you know, for the alleged dog days of summer, there's a lot going on. The new border crisis with the Central American children, obviously, this Boehner-Obama lawsuit talk, the IRS scandal or non-scandal hearings. So it's not like there's nothing to talk about.
You're right. I mean, and as you say, these are, well, people have different views about the lawsuit, but certainly the immigration crisis on the border is not a made-up scandal. I mean, it's a real thing. We have to distinguish so often between what's real and what's made up, and that's certainly a real event. And also Congress is coming back in town this week to sort of get one last set of jockeying in before the midterms.
Right. And will the Democrats hold on to the Senate? We'll get to that, too. But before we play the Obama so sue me clip, set this up for us. I think on the holiday week, even though this was going on earlier last week, I think a lot of people missed it. Is the Speaker of the House of the United States, advocate of tort reform, by the way, suing the President of the United States?
Well, yes. I mean, we don't really know. He hasn't put forward the bill of particulars. He's been kind of vague, but he has promised to go after the president legally because he says the president has overstepped his authority. And this starts really, I mean, this has been a conservative complaint against the president almost since he came in office. At its center, the complaint surrounds the Affordable Care Act and the criticism that the president, when he got into political trouble with the Affordable Care Act and some of its provisions, just exempted those provisions or delayed them or took actions to change the legislation by himself in the implementation of the law that went beyond his authority. And then there are other particulars. There was a lot of upset when in the State of the Union address, the president said, if Congress doesn't act, I will, through executive authority and executive action and memoranda. There was rhetorical upset. In other words, they were upset with the notion that he would even say that he was going to do this. The president, meanwhile, from his perspective, was trying to show that he was doing something in office because polls were showing and otherwise that people were looking at him and saying, you know, here you are, the president of the United States, and you're not doing very much with the office. And so we'll see now what Speaker Boehner is specifically saying, the specific ways in which the president has overstepped his bounds. But the so sue me came when the president was at an event outside the Key Bridge, which connects Virginia and Washington, arguing that if Congress doesn't pass an infrastructure bill, bridges like that will be in danger. The president said, look, if Congress isn't going to act on infrastructure or immigration or any of these other things, I will. And I'm going to help middle class families. And if they want to try and stop me, well, then so sue me.
And so here it is. Obama in that clip reacting to the idea that Boehner might sue him for using too much executive action.
And I told him I'd rather do things with you, pass some laws. Make sure the Highway Trust Fund is funded so we don't lay off hundreds of thousands of workers. It's not that hard. Middle-class families can't wait for Republicans in Congress to do stuff. So sue me. As long as they're doing nothing, I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something.
Obama last week, John Dickerson, Slate, and CBS News chief political correspondent with us now. So you wrote a piece on Slate to the politics of this with the headline, Obama's So Sue Me taunt has bipartisan appeal. What's the bipartisan appeal?
Well, for me, the line, which is quite effective in terms of the way the White House sees it, it became a sort of lens that we can look at the midterm elections. So from the White House point of view, the reason they like this is that it, in a pithy and powerful way, sets up a distinction they've been trying to set up basically since that State of the Union, and you could argue even earlier. And that is the following, which is the president's out there sweating it out and trying to do everything he can to help middle-class families, and the House Republicans are just interested in holding the 50th vote to undo the Affordable Care Act or holding hearings for total side issues. Or engaged in this kind of legislative this suit, so it's a way to kind of set up that fight, and again, it makes the president look like he's out there working, and Republicans are just fooling around. That's the way the White House sees it, and I say the White House as distinct from Democrats because we'll talk about that in a second. And the way the Republicans would see it is, the president took the Speaker Boehner's bait here because the president, in giving that kind of response, it's an arrogant kind of flippant response to another to this House of Congress. It just proves everything that the speaker is saying in his lawsuit, which is the president is disdainful of the rights of Congress and is just arrogant. And so sue me is a nice pithy way to kind of prick the existing anger of motivated conservative base voters who think the president is overstepping his bounds. The way Democrats would see it is there are a lot of Democrats who want the president to fight the House Republicans and conservatives and the Tea Party movement, and so they think, wonderful, finally he's getting in a kind of pugilistic mode. But if you're a Senate candidate, a Democratic Senate candidate in a Republican state, and there are many of them, there are seven states where Democrats are having a tough time defending or trying to win a seat that Mitt Romney won in 2012.
Right, in those states.
Those red states are places where, motivated base conservative voters, there are going to be more of them than Democrats. And if you're a candidate, a Democrat running in those states, you want the conversation to be local about why your opponent is so terrible or why you've brought home things to the state that have affected people in their jobs. You don't necessarily want a big national fight that puts a president who is unpopular in your state at the center of the conversation.
Right. Interesting. So it feeds red meat to the bases of both parties, but actually might threaten some of the Democrats in the swing states because it feeds a larger base that the Republicans can draw on in those states when it comes to turning out in November for the midterms. But is this a fake lawsuit because the Republicans just want to object publicly to the content of Obama's executive orders, like on global warming and the young immigrant dreamers and things like that? Or do you look at this as something that's real and goes to, you know, one of the eternal tensions in the Constitution between executive power and congressional power? Are there areas where Obama really is flirting with what historically the lines of executive orders would be, as opposed to just using things that doing things that Republicans don't like, but using clearly defined parameters of what a president may do? You understand the question?
I absolutely do, and it's precisely the way to frame the way to frame this, Brian. I think we don't know because we don't to have absolutely every charge from Speaker Boehner against the president. My reporting, both inside and both on the Republican side and with experts, most people think this is a political stunt, which isn't to say that some people who I've talked to, sort of experts who watch that line that you carefully pointed out, which is the tension between a president and Congress. And we've had lots of this historically.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue if you're a president, you're not doing your job unless you're bumping up against these lines. If we define one of the roles of the office as bold, persistent experimentation, as FDR put it, then if you're going to be bold and persistent in experimenting, you're going to be running afoul occasionally of the boundaries of your office, and then the other branches will, you know, push you back in line, and that tension is good. But I think what will be interesting in looking at the details here is, for example, you mentioned on the Dreamers, this is obviously an issue that's come into play with the border crisis, but one of the executive actions the president took was to defer the deportation of the children of undocumented workers. Now, if the Republicans want to list that in their bill of particulars, there is a substantive case to do so. However, politically, for Republicans who are wrestling with their own positions on immigration and trying not to make the party look like Republicans talk a lot about how the party appears to minority voters. Making a big deal about that action may not be politically wise.
Right.
And so when we look at the bill in particulars, are they just going to focus on health care or are they going to focus on these other things? And we'll know in that case whether this is serious or whether this is just a way to keep the base voters ginned up for the midterms.
Which I should use as a perfect segue to the child immigration border crisis. But I want to make one more observation about this lawsuit about him being too strong first and get your take on it. The Republicans argue Obama is weak and weakening America around the world. That's one of the most common things we hear right now with what's going on in Iraq and everything. But then they turn around and they argue he's too strong. He acts like a dictator. Now, maybe I'm the only person who noticed, but can they really have it both ways?
Well, yes, there is. That is a weakness in the case that they make. Although I think you can do.
You can be a dictator on domestic policy and be weak on foreign policy.
That's true, precisely. Now, what's interesting is they say it on domestic policy too that he's weak. So that in that case you remove the apples and oranges problem. I think you know when we've had a big discussion about leadership in the Obama years, and a lot of his critics who claim he's not a leader. One of the problems with that claim is that often what they mean when they say he's not a leader is they mean that he's not doing the things they want him to do. I think it's so when they say he's ineffective, it's because he's not doing the things they would want him to do, say, improving the economy. But if you look at what the president has done, the Affordable Care Act, whether you approve of it or not, is an extraordinary piece of legislation for a president to get through and get signed and turned into a law. So in that case, he is not weak and ineffective. And yet, on the other hand, obviously the inability to come to an agreement on the budget issues, on economic issues, the figuring out how to apportion that blame between the president and the House Republicans will be one of the tasks of history for the next couple of generations.
And I guess history will record that he had that moment of a Democratic Congress, both houses of Congress, in his first 2 years, and he spent that political capital on Obamacare. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying that's what he chose to spend it on, and he paid the price because then the country elected, in somewhat of a backlash, a Republican House after that he'll have to live with for the rest of his years in Congress, right?
I think that's right. I think you could. I think another take would be he too easily accepted the what he could get on the stimulus because he did focus first on getting the stimulus through Congress. It was not as large as some people might have wanted, in part because a lot of conservative Democrats in his own party wouldn't have voted for that through the Senate. So that one of the sort of corollaries to the argument you make is that he too easily accepted victory or accepted too small a victory in the stimulus fight then moved on to Obamacare. And then I guess another portion would be, did he go too far in pushing for the full Affordable Care Act when he could have done something smaller and more tailored that would have caused him less political heartache? That would be another possible question to look at that period again.
All right. We will leave that for the second rough draft of history, which is not what journalists do, as we talk to chief political correspondent for Slate and CBS News political director John Dickerson with Monday Morning Politics, national politics today. We've been doing a lot of local politics in this slot with so much going on in New York City and New Jersey in recent months. But we're back to D.C. for today and the nation. And if anybody wants to call in, with a question on some of the things that are going on right now or your own observations, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And maybe the hottest story of the summer with the most echoes for policy and the midterm elections, not to mention people's lives, is the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border with the influx of Central American children. Here is Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson on Meet the Press yesterday.
Our message to those who come here illegally, our border is not open to illegal migration, and we are taking a number of steps to address it, including turning people around faster. We've already dramatically reduced the turnaround time, the deportation time for the adults. We're asking this week for a supplemental from Congress to bring on additional capacity, and we're cracking down on the smuggling organizations.
Jay Johnson trying to sound tough on Meet the Press yesterday, the Homeland Security Director. And John Dickerson, this is quite a dilemma for Obama, and I guess would be for anybody if we think of it in both political and human terms. If he deports these kids en masse, which it sounds like Johnson is saying that's what we do, to situations where, let's say, half their lives are endangered by gangs or political violence, even if we accept that half of them are just coming because they want to try to make a better living in the United States, these 15-year-olds or whatever they are, if even half of them have actual reasons to fear for their safety in Guatemala and Honduras and Nicaragua, he's got serious blood on his hands. But if not, it undermines his hopes for Republican support for comprehensive immigration reform because they can argue the flood of people coming illegally will just grow. So how do you see the dilemma? Do you think they're balancing human safety concerns with political concerns in the White House? Is it that out in the open in that way?
I think they are. I mean, I think we saw it in the Johnson interview, and we'll get to the Republican immigration, comprehensive immigration reform puzzle, which you quite rightly say is a part of this, although the immediate balance is the one you talk about, which is on the one hand, you heard Secretary Johnson saying basically the door is closed. Executive action the president took for Dreamers doesn't apply to these kids. So existing younger people who are in the country, the children of undocumented workers, that just doesn't apply here. And also, no provision in the Senate immigration bill would apply to any of these kids. In other words, trying as declaratively as possible to say, don't come here. There's not a space for you. On the other hand, at the end of that interview, David Gregory was pressing him and saying, so what are you going to do with all these kids who are here? And he melted away. The strong deterrent language of the first part of the interview just kind of dissipated as he sort of tried to dance around that human element that you talked about, which is that you have this horrible situation where these children are here, have nothing to go back to, and so he at one point, I believe the word accommodation was used. In other words, they're going to try and find some accommodation to dealing with that with those children. And so that isn't he said they reach a decision on a broader accommodation, I think was the language. That kind of strips away from that deterrent message, and yet it speaks to that humanitarian aspect of this conundrum that they're trying to balance here. And I don't know whether you can say whether they're balancing it well or not, but we see there in the space of that one interview the administration trying to do both tasks, and we see how they are in tension, because if you really wanted to send a deterrent message, you would say, and those who are already here through this crisis are going to leave as fast as possible, even though their stories are heartbreaking.
Well, what is our refugee or asylum policy for people from anywhere fleeing dangerous conditions or our means of verifying individual claims? I feel like I'm not hearing enough, and I don't even know if you would necessarily know the answer as a political director, but I feel like I'm not hearing enough explanation of what the criteria actually are. So we must have a refugee policy or an asylum policy for people of any age from any place fleeing legitimately dangerous conditions and some kinds of means of verifying individual claims.
There are. I think there are three categories, and you're right. This is beyond my area, but I think you have – so you have those that have relatives in the United States. That's one category. Then you have others that can claim a political persecution or persecution that would get them under this sort of United Nations umbrella. And that's a situation where that's political asylum essentially, and those guidelines are set by the United Nations Refugee Convention, I believe, which the United States has signed, and so that I don't know who makes that determination, but that would be another category here, and then there would be a third category, which would be those who have crossed the border that don't have any relationships in the United States, and those would go through the deportation hearings. And the question that's unresolved for me is the hearings take quite a lot of time normally. And one of the things, as we heard Secretary Johnson try to do in that interview, was say, for adults, we've sped up the hearing and deportation process. So it's now down, I think he said, to 4 days. So the message there, again, is borders are closed. You come over. We're sending you right back. But then it became unclear what the situation is with these kids and whether the hearings, just what that process is, and that I'm unsure about.
All right. Well, we've got a few topics on the table here. There are about six more that I'd like to bring up with John Dickerson today, but we're not going to have time for most of them, and I want to get some of you folks on who are calling in, so why don't we do that right now? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Carol in Bergen County, you're on the air. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a comment on President Obama and the executive order that he's put in place recently, and I just don't agree with him doing that. I think he's more interested in his legacy, considering it's his last term, than it really is about caring about the middle class. I think he's overstepping his bounds and our checks and balances and why we have it set up this way.
Why are those two things at odds for you? Because he would say, whether you agree with the particular policies or not, that he's all about the middle class and he's trying to do things on behalf of the middle class that Congress won't let him do.
Well, I think it has to be – okay, I don't think the focus should be on what he wants to do. I think the office that he is representing is what needs to be respected, mm-hmm. and Congress has an office as well, and they're supposed to work together to make
right.
things happen.
Is there
the
any
problem is you have political biases here. You have Republican and Democrats that are looking for their own agenda.
Correct.
And Obama wants to look like a hero right now.
Do you have any particular executive order that you're familiar with, excuse me, that most rankles you?
I think the one with the immigration situation.
With the Dreamers?
Yes.
Carol, thanks. Go ahead. Did you want to say something about it? You can.
Yeah, I think it's not so much a crisis for us. I think those people were in Mexico, so the crisis really is focused on Mexico, and we don't hear anything about what they're doing regarding these situations, and it just seems like everything is falling on the U.S. side, and the reason why it's falling on our side is because we're accepting these people into our countries. I know of one particular case, a close friend of mine, who threw herself at the mercy of the Border Patrol in Texas. And in order for her to be processed for deportation, because they had so many cases in that part of the nation, they had to defer her to the jurisdiction of family members in New Jersey,
Carol,
to see her through and deport her back. But now we're talking she's going to be in this country indefinitely until her case gets heard.
Carol, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Also on immigration, I think, and the Central American immigrant crisis, Joe in Islip. Joe, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why anybody's not really addressing the issue. They think they can just keep importing people of poor people and whatever. The corporations are taking advantage of their countries like they're taking advantage of ours. They're creating these poor people. Now they're coming over here and they're degrading our economy by working for less. They're going to they're taking away our middle class. We're basically importing slave labor and making ourselves all slaves to a few people that have the money to buy and sell our lives on a crooked Wall Street thing. And when is this revolution going to take place where we just turn these tables over for the final time? We're going to have to salary cap people because they're taking too much.
So let me understand where you're going, Joe. You're anti-Wall Street, anti-big corporation, corporate power,
but also
anti-immigrant as part of that package.
No, no, it has nothing to do against the immigrants. They're being taken advantage just like we are, but we're going to be pitted against each other to fight each other because they're hiring Mexicans over white people here in our own country. What do you think they're going to do when we're hungry? We're going to not fight them?
Joe, thank you for your call. And I guess from a political standpoint, John Dickerson, that's a lot of the Republican refrain, not necessarily with, with the Wall Street as the puppet master frame that Joe put on it, but that we just can't absorb as many people as are coming in, be it the larger flow from Mexico over the years or this immediate flow of miners from Central America, from countries in crisis. I saw on CBS News, I think, the other night, one woman at one of these hearings in Murrieta, is that the town, along the border, saying, they're ruining our country, middle-aged white woman. And even if we think it's crazy to assert that, there's a lot of belief out there that the country just can't absorb this many people who, for whatever reason, that they're uneducated, they're unskilled, they're culturally different, and they're going to overwhelm American values. But that's the heart of it, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think so. I've come up against a variety of voices that say a variety of things. One is the values element that you just articulated, which is this suggests this flow suggests a further erosion of the country that I used to love, and why can't things be the way they used to be? And that general feeling, which touches all kinds of things, it was a part of the Hobby Lobby case, a part of a whole cultural change. The immigration touches on that feeling. I think there's also this idea that,
and we, I just add that, of course, that once upon a time, the Irish were unassimilable, the Italians were unassimilable. We don't have to go down that whole rabbit hole, but just saying.
We don't, but what you say is right, which is that you can read quotes from the 1920s in which people were saying, "I want the country to be the way it used to be," and they were talking about Irish and Italian. But there's also the question of a magnet, and that's why the administration is trying so hard, both for substantive reasons but also political ones, to say this immigration increase of children here, which has doubled, I think, in the last year, is not a result of anything we've done. We haven't created the magnet, because in the immigration debate, there's a huge conversation about the minute you start talking about creating a pathway to citizenship, you create a magnet for more people to come. And so this seems to be validation of that. And then finally, I think the kind of feeling that the caller may have been touching on is sort of or that I hear is kind of everyone gets theirs from the government except me. So these immigrants, they burst through the border and everybody's suddenly trying to fix their problem. Well, why isn't somebody trying to fix my problem? And they're not the same. Fixing, being deported is not exactly having your problem fixed. But it's a sort of a sense of where's the attention of our public conversation going? And it's going on these people who are breaking the law on the border and not going to me in my struggles as I, still am under the weight of this great recession.
And I guess this crisis, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think people will argue against this point, but does it somewhat put the lie to one of the premises of Obama and Democratic comprehensive immigration reform, which is we've sealed the border. We've done this as well as anybody could do it. Bush was doing it. We continued it and continued to strengthen the sealing of the border so that if we have comprehensive immigration reform for those undocumented people here, there's not going to be a third wave. It's not going to draw in thousands or millions more. But now we see, they can't stop all these kids. Just kids from sneaking into the United States in high numbers. So does it undermine this, that part of the central argument for why comprehensive immigration reform for those already here would be okay?
Yes, absolutely. And I think even if you want to make the critique beyond the Obama administration, one of the things you hear a lot from conservatives is in 1986 when Ronald Reagan signed what conservatives call amnesty, there were promises about security that kind of fell away. And the idea with the comprehensive immigration reform debate from those who are so opposed to it is you can make no promises about securing the border that will withstand the political pressure, the humanitarian pictures that we talked about earlier, the horrible, heart-wrenching stories that we hear. That will always trump whatever security measures you promise to make to keep the border secure. And that's why these conservatives don't believe in a trade where a trade that says we'll seal the border if you agree to having some pathway to legal status, because they say it will, that trade will always, we being the conservatives, will always lose out because the humanitarian piece mm-hmm. will always trump the sort of strict security view of this.
Sorry to say that we're not going to be able to take a caller from Westchester who just got on the board, who says she's half Guatemalan and half Irish. We could have talked like 195 years of history with her. So, Rita, call us back another day. But we have to leave it here with John Dickerson for our Monday Morning Politics segment for this week. CBS News political director, chief political correspondent for Slate as well, and one-third of the always witty, always incisive Slate Politics Gabfest, which you can hear on the weekends here on WNYC. John, thanks for giving us the time.
Thanks, Brian. It's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the new heroin addiction, is it different from the old? Stay with us.